as a singular planet.
In fact, it is anything but. What it is a story not of a universe,
but a multiverse.
Where universes and planets, such as Earth,
were replicated and mirrored across a vibrating, infinite plane.
Some barely different from the next.
Others drastically so.
This is DC On Screen. Every week, Dave and Jason talk about the multiverse of DC properties on film and television. But be warned, if it's been officially released, you can expect they'll spoil it.
And the only quotes I wrote down were stuff that was just funny and quick that I could jot down. Like, you know, a couple of Alfreds and a Bullock.
Couple Alfreds and a Bullock.
Yeah. And one Zazz.
Oh, Zazz was phenomenal this
episode. God, that's the best fucking thing. Yeah, let's get into that. Man, he stole the show.
All right. Welcome into episode 428 of DC On Screen. Oh, man, we're going to talk about the, and we're going to get spoilery on...
Spoiler-filled!
Season 4 premiere of Gotham, A Dark Knight Packs Pinguina. I guess. I think that's how he pronounced that in the episode. I'm awful about that.
It's a dead language. No one knows. That could be pronounced Pax John.
I'm your host, David C. Robertson. This is my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hello.
All right. So, as per the synopsis on Google, Detective Gordon suspects that Jonathan Crane has resurfaced. Penguin hosts the grand opening of his new Iceberg Lounge, and Bruce begins his vigilante watch. What did you think about this episode, man?
I had a lot of fun. I really did. I kind of don't know if there's anything I'm too down on, really, with everything I saw.
I've got one big thing.
Let's see if it just jogs really my memory, on. And I was
the crime licenses. It just seems like the state would like come in and be like, "No, this is some bullshit.
Nah,
you can't do that."
No, I mean, well, for two reasons. One, I just don't want to think about state rights versus municipalities in a show like Gotham.
I do,
because that's why I tuned in to begin with. I want jurisdictional legal jargon.
I actually kind of do. I mean, I don't think that'd be a bad call. I mean, look at Law and Order, for God's sake.
Yeah, but the other thing is, like, Gotham is only, like, kind of loosely somewhere. I mean, it's just a vague idea of, like, a city that's so big it almost doesn't need a state.
I mean, you know, the idea of, you know, criminals carrying around a card that has, a penguin's umbrella stamp on it.
Yeah.
Is so 1960s Batman.
I could see that. I could definitely see that take on it. To me, it's completely outlandish, but it's I think it's a far cry better than Certificates of Sanity. So like the show's already, they're just pulling back. I think from uh-huh. where they previously like this. I'm fine with that at this point. I don't know if I've just been broken as a human or what, but that didn't even that really didn't bother me at all. Like I know it's. Just plain stupid, but I was fine with it. It's it led to some cool stuff. Like last year, it was Jim versus the Bounty Hunters. Jim versus the Bounty. He was the Bounty Hunter, and then this year it's like sure. Gordon versus all the card carrying criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even led to some cool stuff with like Bruce gets the name of all the licensees and wants to start picking them off. Like there was. It led to some cool stuff, not the least of which was the conversation with what feels like a much taller Bruce. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're shooting him differently or if he's just way taller than I remember or what. And now I feel like one of those old guys, you see it like a family reunion, it's like, you're so tall now, you know? But
I ain't saying you, since you is an itty-bitty baby.
Yeah, that's the sentence we hear all the time. By the way, we're from Alabama, so
yeah,
that's what we get all the time with exactly that accent. I know it happens to everybody else just with a different accent. That's a common thing, like, oh, you're so tall now. But
yeah.
So anyway, I had a moment of feeling like that old person. But
I have relatives who'll be like, you just keep getting taller and taller every time I see you. And I'm like, we saw each other last year. I'm 33.
Right.
I haven't gotten taller in quite a long time. Actually, I've gone back the other way. I've started shrinking now.
Yeah. But you're older and your spine is shrinking at a faster rate, so I see your point now that you think about it. You're compressing faster than I. Anyway, my point was, though, it was a great conversation between Bruce and Penguin.
Yeah.
This Bruce is just great. Really loved him this episode. He was a complete badass.
Absolutely.
Seems to be Bruce really standing on his own two feet. Like, Alfred's got his back, but it's definitely not Alfred's kind of steering the boat anymore. He's on Bruce's crusade now. Love it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Selena, awesome. Oh, Duggar.
Yeah, great. Great little street fight with her. Everything mm-hmm. with the whip, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I hope the choreography with her fighting with that whip is as good for the rest of the series as it was in that scene, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, her and Tabitha, loving that.
Yep. Zaz, man. Zaz is phenomenal.
Oh, just blew everything outside. I really enjoyed this episode, man. There wasn't a lot of... I really can't think of anything I feel like hating on. It got a little silly here and there, but who cares?
Me.
It's Gotham. I expect it to get a little silly. I expect it to get way silly, and then I get a little disappointed. But this was just a little silly here and there, kind of fun, and I enjoyed myself. So, like, in an episode where I already enjoyed myself, they knocked it. It just, man, they knocked it out of the park with Zaz. This is I've never wanted him to stick around more than I wanted him this episode.
Mm-hmm.
When he said, "Is that pepperoni?" I lost my shit. I really did.
Yeah. He's a fun character.
He is. He's great. He's got like this easy, sleazy kind of confidence to him mm-hmm. that they really nail. Like he walks into a room with however many people, and you just feel like he knows exactly how he would take every single one of them out in about 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Which is always a lot of fun, just because badasses are fun to watch. But man, just the aloofness of his dialogue, so much fun.
That does beg the question, what did you think of Michael Buscemi?
Oh, God. He was maybe the funniest part if there was any part that I kind of thought pulled me out of the episode, it was Buscemi Jr. Or as I was calling him in my head while I'm watching it, Teeny Buscemi.
That's his brother, but yeah.
I know. And I don't even know if that's his younger brother. That's how it came across to me.
Probably would have to be.
That was the only thing I thought was actually distracting, was how much that was Buscemi's brother.
I did the thing where I kept looking at him and going, God, he looks familiar to me. But I can't, like, he looks like somebody I know, but he's just off somehow. And
I
was talking to Bethany, and she was like, oh, Steve Buscemi's brother. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't even.
Yeah.
Something about it clicked immediately. Something about that accent. Something. I don't know, man. I took one look at this guy and, like, perked up and went, oh, my God, Steve Buscemi has a brother. And then, mm-hmm. you know, IMDb'd it while I'm watching. And sure enough, there he is. It was glaringly obvious. And, by the way, he didn't do a bad job. It was just really distracting that it was him.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the warden?
Oh, the warden? The guy with the creepy smile?
Yeah.
The creepy pedo smile?
Yeah, sure.
He was all right.
There was something weird about him. Like I thought he was awful, and then like I was looking for who the actor was, and now that it is actually on IMDb now, it wasn't when like the night that it came out.
Mm.
But I was looking at message boards, and people were like, "This guy deserves an Emmy. He's awesome." I'm like, "What is happening? Did I miss something?
How did that guy pop out of this episode?" I mean, yeah, I remember him, but I don't remember him that well.
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of.
I remember, his choices were a little memorable. He did a good job. He just didn't stand out in this episode to me. Like, I'm happy going back to that cat, but
if they go back to him, I'll watch it. I'm gonna watch it anyway. But
oh yeah, oh I have, enjoy it. I have one better for you, or a better question, I think, or the next question. Okay, whatever. Penguin's haircut. How do you feel?
It's gonna be better.
Better? You feel better about this?
Yeah, I've been hoping that he would progress beyond the Connor Oberst in a Tim Burton movie look for a long time.
That was well put, yeah.
So.
That was well put. Well, it's like, I think I'm remembering the name right. Robert Smith? Was that his name?
Man, I don't know.
Singer of The Cure?
Oh. I'm not... the biggest Cure fan, I'd have to look that up. I'm sorry. Mm. I don't...
can't remember. But, in any case, his spirit animal has Penguin's former hair.
Yeah, I'm looking at him. Yeah. Yeah, Robert Smith.
Was it Robert Smith? Okay. Thanks, South Park, for drilling that into my head 12, 13 years ago.
I don't know, man. He's got more of an Edward Scissorhands, Noel Fielding kind of vibe.
Yeah, I know, but I figure his spear down will kind of change with the times a little bit, slick it down, shorten it. That's how things are going these days.
Or like, Penguin on Gotham just kind of looks like a pineapple.
He does sometimes look like a pineapple. Like someone shellacked the top of a pineapple and just peeled it down over the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
But the Tim Burton paradigm is still present.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that was a vast improvement. Also, Penguin holding up this season so far, all of one
yes,
episode
absolutely.
In. He's terrifying, intimidating. I like this new union situation he's got going on. He's kind of in the ante as far as his ability to delegate and separate. Separate the pieces of a crime puzzle, so it's harder to prosecute, stuff like that. I love all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I always enjoy Robin Lord Taylor doing Penguin. Hair being weird or not, I enjoy it.
Yeah, his hair has always been kind of standoutish, but he's done a great job with the character.
Mm-hmm.
And something I realized in this episode in particular is I love how much, this is going to sound like a silly Hollywood thing to say, but I love how much energy he has on screen compared to whatever's happening on screen.
Yeah,
he's always at eight at least. Like, in his most mild scenes, you can almost see him visibly shaking. You know what it actually reminds me of is, you remember Squiggle Vision from Dr. Katz?
Yeah, and Home Movies.
And Home
Absolutely.
Movies? Yeah, that's actually what he reminds me of. Like, he always has so much that he's just simmering. Like, his literal skin seems to be moving on me.
Well, he seems like he's at a 12 and he's pulling back to an 8. Like, he's just about to burst at the seams with whatever anger or, intense sorrow that he has within him.
Yeah.
Or sometimes jubilation. Rarely.
Yeah. I really do love that. Like, whatever emotion he's doing, and it's not like he's going over the, he's not hamming it to me. Like, I always believe him. If anything, he's one of the people that no matter what situation they put him in, Robert Lord Taylor has always made me feel something about the Penguin. We've had other characters, the Riddler every now and then has thrown you off, at least I know, and me, I think he threw you off sometimes more than he did me, but they put him in weird situations and sometimes it doesn't work out for his character as well. I don't know what Penguin's doing, but I've always bought it with him.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, or mentioning the Riddler, I have to say, the creepy shot of him was pretty funny and pretty great.
Yeah, that was good.
I enjoyed it.
So what did you think of the Scarecrow?
I think I'm going to be okay with this.
Yeah?
I think I am. He looks creepy. He looks creepy in a way that I like. Late in the Batman series, Volume 4-ish.
Uh-huh.
That is one of my favorite character designs with the noose and all that kind of stuff. But I really I like how they built the character this go-around. Just some poor kid they used to mimic a formula that he's seen, who's just sitting in fear, and then they throw him into Face's fears, and then he comes out and he's Scarecrow. That's a fine enough origin story for me.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't come across as too much.
Yeah,
I think I'm in. And God, I love Scarecrow when he's done well so much. So far it's on track. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm okay with it so far. He looks creepy, certainly. I sort of always hope that the Scarecrow will have a, I don't know, sort of a, what would you call it? Would it be like a Fraser Crane type of New England upper middle class?
Oh, you want him
voice?
To,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you want him to sound a little haughty.
Yeah,
sound a little overeducated, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now this,
it's just going back to the animated series, man.
Yeah, yeah. That's you're going back to McDowell.
Yeah, well, it was. I don't think it was McDowell.
Not
was
McDowell.
It?
What's his name? Sorry. You know his name, Portavoy. No, that was Mad Hatter.
That's Roddy McDowell.
That was Roddy McDowell. I was thinking of the wrong character.
That was Roddy McDowell. I have to look it up. Gosh, this is embarrassing. I can't remember this. I mean, I know Jeffrey Combs was Scarecrow, and when it comes back to the new Batman adventures, Henry Pollack II. I would have never remembered that.
No, there's no chance. Well, hey, we all can learn through our embarrassment of not being able to remember a character from a show that apparently started 25 years ago.
I remember everybody else's voice.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. But, yeah.
We got there through, the remedies of the internet. Now, here's one of the... maybe the coolest thing, or the thing that made me kind of giddy in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce just vanishes on Gordon.
That was phenomenal, wasn't it?
That was fantastic. Even like, I watched this with my wife, and even she went, oh, yeah, like Batman, that's cool. I was over there smirking, just so happy with myself. Yep, our first time for him, you know?
Yeah.
That was fantastic. It really was. And, you know, just to talk about Bruce's kind of coming out party here, like, you know, he gets the, apparently it was Alfred's idea. There was like no substitute for real world encounters.
Uh-huh.
Kind of love that, that Alfred was the guy that, in coming out of his background, being, you know, like a Black Books member of the Royal Army, coming from that to tell him, like, you really have to get out there and fight some people makes complete sense. Love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like watching Bruce go from, you know, we've seen where he went from, like, but watching him go to like the vigilante here, and Alfred's got his back, and then even him with Selena, where he's way more sure of himself this time. This isn't a guy who's baking a cake for a first date or something like that. Like, this is just a guy that's very sure of himself, and there was no flinching in him this episode. And really, it was really a nice moment when he hops up on the side of the building with Selena. Like, she dares him, and he doesn't blink.
Yeah.
I did not know I could love Bruce Wayne's character in the show more than I already did, because he's one of the people that's never failed us. But
well, it's easy to do, you know, because there was a you know, a big mat right there and a green screen, so it didn't look scary, you know.
Yeah, but I still couldn't do it, because that's at least 2.5 feet off the ground that he was standing on.
Yeah, I can't get on the third rung of a ladder without freaking out.
Yeah, so I still have major respect for even David as opposed to Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is. He's a phenomenal actor, man. He's really good.
He is. And they wrote the crap out of him in this episode. They gave him some great moments, and he completely filled that ticket, I think. And it got us this wonderful line from Alfred that says, like, why can't you just go to the cinema like normal teenagers?
Right.
Oh, good stuff on that one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, what else are we missing?
I don't know what... Oh, mm-hmm. One good Harvey line that I'm hoping kind of... I felt like this episode was odd, but in a way a little more grounded than, say, like, you know, premiere of last season, where we're dealing with a bunch of possibly reanimated monsters, you know? In a way, just setting up a major first of the season villain that's just a kid with some major neurological damage, and a band of thieves with a decent idea for a second, and even the licenses, it's all a little grounded. Like, even the licenses, there's literally paperwork, and apparently a guy in charge of the paperwork. Like, all this makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it feels like they're going a slightly different way than they did before, but I'm hoping this line from Harvey where he says, he's dead, not that matters in this town anymore.
Yeah,
I'm really hoping between that and, you remember in the finale of last season, they kind of talked about how weird things got for a second. Just him and Gordon kind of have like a little, you know, little post-op.
Yeah,
I don't know. I really hope that's them turning the page into like less of a Court of Owls conspiracy thing, which, you know, the Court of Owls went okay, but it could have been better.
Yeah,
and combined with all the monsters, it was just a lot going on, and a lot of it involved. Almost just a fair amount of, I don't know, fair amount of magical thinking and stuff like that. It just, this seemed a little more grounded. Might be a lot more fun to just try kind of what the show actually told us they were going to do in the first place. Like Jim and Bruce Wayne versus some dudes and some punching. Let's try that for a second. See how it works out.
Okay. I'd forgotten. Gosh, I'd even forgotten about the Court of Owls, man. That story wore on me. I wasn't the biggest fan of that one.
It did. It did some justice to the story, but being that, like Court of Owls is what, like a 3 or 4 volume trade paper? I mean, it's huge. It's a giant story. And they got some of it in there, and it's nice to see it portrayed, but it didn't do... I mean, it really didn't do justice completely to what was there. I mean, yeah, I'm not trying to be like one of those, oh, the book was better kind of guys. I just felt like they could have taken a couple themes a little further.
Yeah, but it's okay to be the book was better guy, but when it's true, I mean.
Yeah, but like the book is always going to be
better. It's just like unabashedly true.
Well, the book is almost always going to be better.
Yeah, almost, but you know. It's just they just grabbed hold of the most boring aspects of the owls to me. And the few really good things they grabbed, they just kind of somehow winnowed it down to something boring.
Yeah, they did. If I put it this way, it's like they distilled it. And it was just a little impure when they were done.
Yeah. like, their little Victorian masks never looked as good as, like, those creepy, like, porcelain white masks that they wore in the comics.
Like, it almost looked like, something about them almost felt like they were carved out of bone. I don't know what Capullo did, but he was really creeping me out with that crap.
Yeah, and plus they always kind of drew the court members as somewhat, they almost looked undead, you know, the way they drew their arms and their hands.
I can see that.
Of course, that would make sense, you know, since all the Talons were
undead,
basically dead folks.
Yeah.
But they, again, they took that concept and made it like, you're just a dude in a mask.
Yeah, the only thing they really gave him was, like, it's a dude in a mask, but he is an impossibly good hand-to-hand combatant. And at least we got that, but it wasn't the major psychological damage that we got in the books. But that being said, like, they can't, that was never on the table, because it was the Court of Owls v. Batman, and this is the Court of Owls v. a Bruce Wayne that doesn't even know he wants to be Batman yet. So a lot of that was never even in consideration.
I don't know.
But
I don't know. It, you know, whatever. But that's not what's even going on in this episode.
Nah.
So,
I tell you, there's. I think I'm about out of stuff, I suppose. But
yeah,
there was a nice moment with Bullock where, like, early in the episode, Bullock is kind of willing to play like, look, crime's down, man. We can make this, like, this isn't so bad, is it? And like, that was a nice. It was a nice kind of philosophical discussion about, you know, what are you willing to put up with to keep a certain thing. Ends and means and all that. And there's a point late in the episode where, like, Gordon storms off to, you know, face injustice, come what may, I suppose. And Bullock just looks at him like, I hate being this guy's friend, and then storms right after him.
Yeah.
They've done a wonderful job of keeping that relationship. Like, from the moment those two met, it's been, I'm going to respect the hell of this guy, but he's going to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
and
like, we're for fire me, Harvey. Don't tempt me.
Yeah, I mean, we're half a decade into this story in our personal lives, and it's just that hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah,
oh,
I do always like the Jim and Bullock dynamic.
They're fantastic. Last thing I think I maybe had Bruce getting arrested.
Yeah,
well, not getting arrested, but Bruce in danger of being arrested.
yeah, that was. Did they leave that as a cliffhanger for the next episode?
That's kind of...
Is that what happened?
That's kind of where it is. It's basically, oh crap, you know?
Yeah. I didn't remember a wrap-up to that.
No, there's not really a wrap-up to that. But it's kind of a cliffhanger. We'll see where that goes. But it's kind of nice that they dug right into him being a vigilante. I mean, he was already a vigilante, and there was some discussion of there's a guy out there, and he doesn't respect the licenses, and even Gordon's kind of curious about the guy, and that was all cool. But to actually see some, you know, police flashlights on him at the end of the episode kind of felt right.
Yeah. So you're excited about where this season is going so far?
So far. We didn't actually mention this at all. So Razor was watching that first fight in the alley.
Yes, he was.
What do you think's going on there?
Same as always. Raish is watching Bruce, seeing, you know, how well he's doing and planning his inevitable Raish believes inevitable switch over to the dark side. He's looking for an heir. That's what he's always been doing.
That's true. And also, Raish is one of those villains that doesn't think he's evil at all.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, for him, this isn't the dark side. He's just waiting for Bruce to, I guess, you know, get his personal life in order, get his training completed, and then he can finally join him in his great, great destiny, I guess, however he'd phrase it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just hope the writing stays on par, because if it isn't, Alexander Siddig will start phoning it in, apparently.
So you've mentioned.
Yeah. Luckily, I didn't notice when he did it on TS9. I was just like, yeah, this is great. I didn't notice that he was, like, detesting the entire thing.
Oh, it's nice.
I guess phoning it in for him is, like, taking it down a notch, which just seems like really subtle acting.
Right, yeah. There's probably just a part of him that can't help but in some way emote the scene. So, you know, he's thinking about just getting back to his trailer, or, God, I want to go home. And then, you know, the whole time his body's still going through the motions of actually doing a half decent job.
Yeah.
I don't know how much we can glean from him being, you know, half in shadow and turning back to walk into a building. I don't think we're there yet, though.
Yeah, no, I just seems like some Ra's al Ghul shit to me, man.
It does. You know, So far, so good. I'm excited. If I hope anything happens so far, it's that they keep Zaz as upfront as possible at that. I mean, I have a renewed vigor for that character.
Yep. I don't think it ever went away. I really like Zaz.
Yeah, he's always been fun.
Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for this episode, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm good. Hope it continues.
Yeah. Now, we are, as we've mentioned on the show before, but if this is your first time, welcome. And we are not going to be doing a review for every episode this season. We will come back and recap and review the Gotham at the Gotham season mid-season finale. Sorry, and we'll probably be discussing it somewhat on the news episodes. We have a weekly news episode where we talk about the DC film news and DC TV news, and we'll probably get around to mentioning where we feel like the season is going for all the DC shows. Because we watch all of them.
Yeah, no, yeah, we'll be keeping up and talking about them kind of week to week, but not episodically.
Yeah, but I think that's it. I think we're good. So I want to remind everybody that it does really help us out if you go to iTunes and leave us a review, a rating and a review, and we tweet at DC on Screen, one word. You can like us on Facebook. Proud members of the Giant Says Team Up Network. And we'll be back in a couple of days with news for the for the movies and the television. I don't know why I can't talk today. My brain is gone.
Hey, you know,
long-time listeners of the show will say, like, no, you're always this shitty, Dave.
No, this is what we do. This is what we do. We do it proudly, even though we shouldn't.
I don't know what you're saying there. Are you saying that I'm just shitty all the time and that's what we do?
I'm saying we constantly fail ourselves and our listeners.
Oh, yeah.
But that's nothing new. It's basically part of our intro.
Yeah. If you have strong feelings about that, call us 205-259-6331. Leave us a voicemail. We'll leave it on the show.
if you'd like to just chime in and mention how right we are about that.
Yeah. Anyway. We're also going to be doing a, just so you know, we'll be doing a, premiere review for Supergirl, Lucifer, Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow, and whenever it comes out, Black Lightning, I guess that'll be January, right? And Krypton, whenever the hell that happens.
Teen Titans somewhere like stuff. A year from now.
Yeah, I can't
whatever
keep track
it
of
else
all this
is
stuff.
The WB exclusive network throws at us.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't keep track. That's why I use TV Time.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic app if you've never heard of it. It's great.
Oh, I just glanced at it a second ago, by the way. After each episode, they have, like, who was the best? And the community vote right now was, in order, it was Bruce, then Zaz. Zaz came in number two for best character for the premiere.
Yeah, he's great. So, I mean, how the hell did he beat, did he not beat Bruce? But Bruce is pretty great too.
See, you just can't quite put him over Bruce. He was great, but Bruce killed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also basically his show.
Yeah. That's what I tell you, man. That's what I tell you. Yeah. Kid needs to be playing Damien in the DCEU.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I mean, part of me'd hate it, but part of me'd love it.
Yeah. Legacy casting, man. That's where it's at.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, guys, see you next time. Until then, keep some DC on your screen. Our opening narration was from Dan Juergens' The History of the DC Universe, Part 3 of 10, as featured in DC 52, Week 4. It was performed by me, David Z. Robertson. Intro music by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band Future Elevators can be found on Spotify or future-elevators.com. Our introduction was performed by Eli Ophelders of Stealing the Remote, which lives on SoundCloud and can be found on iTunes and Stitcher. We're a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network, giantsizeteamup.com. DC On Screen is a maladjusted production. Visit maladjusted.tv for more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy and improvised web series, vlogs, parodies, and more.